All right, Paul Sack, it's Good News Planet. I'm here with, let me make sure I say this right, because I know it's a beautiful title that's bestowed on a master of this art and science. Acharya? How do I say that?
You're Shunya? Almost there. Yeah, it is Acharya Shunya. Acharya is my title.
All righty. And it is what it is. It's a beautiful title that's given for a master of a science, the science of Ayurveda. Do I have that right?
That is perfect. You have it right.
Okay, so you've authored a book called Ayurveda Lifestyle Wisdom, a complete prescription to optimize, I was at the eye doctor today and I'm still a little fuzzy, to optimize your health, prevent disease, and live with vitality and joy. Okay, what is it about those kinds of words? Just even saying those words, you feel better. What do you think?
Yeah, they do, and I want to just tell all our listeners that this science is ancient. It's from India, but it's relevant today. And this is what it does. It does not simply fight disease, but it actually makes you expect and enjoy, you know, good health, vitality, and immunity. It does that.
And you're the president of the California Association for Ayurvedic Medicine. So, well, what actually is, well, can you give us first a little background on the book?
Yeah, let's do that. And maybe I should begin with even the word Ayurveda.
Okay.
Because for our listeners who may not have heard of it, Ayurveda literally means the knowledge of life. It doesn't mean the knowledge of disease. It's a perennial wisdom that helps us live our life in such a way that each day lived well becomes like elixir or a medicine unto itself. And this wisdom has been around for thousands of years, and it teaches a beautiful 24-hour lifestyle, like what to do, what to eat, you know, when to do what, as well as a 12-month lifestyle based on seasons. And apparently when we live according to this lifestyle, we're closer to nature. We're not fighting nature. We're in alignment with it, and this awakens health. And I've been doing this, Paul, for, you know, almost three decades, and it's been a real successful run, and people are regaining their health, you know, even grim prognoses and difficult diseases are being put at bay, and, you know, people are unexpectedly and expectedly enjoying health. So I felt like it's time to write the book and put it out there, let more and more people know about it.
You're a trailblazer, as it says here, and have won awards for that. So tell us, how does somebody start? I mean, I read your book, but tell us what would be one of the first things. So, you know, the average person has no knowledge of this. What would be the first? Is it my buddy has a restaurant up the street here in New York called Ayurveda Cafe, Chalak Malik, a good friend, and for many years. So he has food in there that I think is created with the Ayurveda considerations. Is it food? Is it yoga? Is it meditative? Where do we begin here?
Yeah, so Ayurveda includes all of those that you mentioned. It's also spices, also home remedies. But I think I would call it a way of life. And, you know, it addresses the human being in five dimensions. So one of them is physical, so it affects the, so it wants to have something to, it wants to tell us about food on a daily basis, on a seasonal basis, and also on the basis of whether we can digest it or not. So if we cannot digest it, then can we add some spices that's going to aid our digestion? Then it wants to deal with us at a sensorial level, and that's very interesting because now the science of neurobiology tells us that indeed, whatever our senses are exposed to, the bits and bytes of information does affect our neurology, our immunity, and our psychology. Well, Ayurveda has been saying that for a long time. So it wants to teach us about how to curate those life experiences, those smells, those tastes, those sexual encounters, and just kind of make it happen in such a way that there's mindfulness there and it's not just, you know, mindless consumption of, you know, even music, like nonstop listening or nonstop work on the computer or the television monitor. So all of that influences our health. Then it goes on to talk about our emotional thinking faculty, the mind, and it teaches us all kinds of beautiful methodologies, which I share in the book, on how to have a calmer, more focused, more balanced mind so that we can actually, you know, have improved ability to cope with life, cope with its ups and downs. Then it wants to talk about our social and spiritual adaptation. So social is relational, and spiritual is our connection with something beyond us. Ayurveda is not religious. It is not even trying to convert us into a vegetarian or a vegan necessarily. It respects all those modalities, but ultimately it says, well, you have to eat based on what you can digest. So it's not forcing anything on us, but it does say that it would be great if we human beings could have a spiritual connection with nature, with the sun, with the moon, with a greater mind, you know, and a pure consciousness. So all these things together, I think, Dave, would well explain Ayurveda's approach. And then it brings it down at the micro level as to, okay, here is a day. It's an empty canvas. What can you do? Can you meditate? Can you drink a tea made with, you know, fresh-grown roses or marigolds in your home? Can you do a yoga posture that's going to release hidden energies and vitality within you? Can you, for example, move your heaviest meal to the midday to coincide with the big sun out there versus, you know, late in the night when there is no sun, because our guts and our brain, they're connected to the heat and light of the sun. Modern science proves it. Ayurveda has been saying it all along. So I hope I'm giving a picture for our listeners as to that. It's not just one thing. It's not just one cosmetic or food or even a nutraceutical, but it's a way of life. It's an art of living. And it's very ancient and it's very seasoned without any embarrassing oops moment saying, oops, that was a quick statement that we need to, you know, issue a recall. It's tried and tested and it works.
There's a question here that suggested, well, first of all, your book is like narrative-based. It's a guidebook, and it covers the how-tos of the morning and evening self-care, daily contemplation, self-massage, and skincare, cooking, including recipes, beauty rituals, and more. Wow, you're covering a lot of things here, so it's you care about sharing, I got a feeling.
I care about sharing. That's well said. I'll write that down. That is me, absolutely. And I needed to take, I took a year and a half sabbatical from my life. I'm the founder of a busy school of Ayurveda and yoga in California. I'm the president of a California-wide Association of Ayurvedic Medicine. I advise various national and international organizations on holistic health. I teach at various conventions and conferences, including at UCSF and all of these other places in California. But, you know, I took a year and a half because I wanted to capture this knowledge with all its details and not create a dumbed-down version of it. And while cherry-picking is totally recommended, I would love for people to have this one book that is authentic, that can be relied upon and that they can go back to and keep reclaiming more and more health for the rest of their life. David, I would like to share the story of one of my case studies. I have several case studies in the book. These are people you can actually meet if you, you know, people came up to me and to my organization in California and, or you know, even Google their names and find out about their personal stories. So there's this story of Brittany Barrett. She was all of 22, and she was on 18 prescription drugs for ulcerative colitis. And when I met her, I just gave her five simple things to do from Ayurveda's lifestyle repertoire of things that we can do. And those five things, which are as simple as meditating every day for 15 minutes, making a special recipe with yogurt and water in a certain proportion, a smoothie with some spices added, the recipes in the book, and drinking that. Just five simple things. She got off of all her medication. within just a few weeks, she got off some medication, and within a year, she got off of all of it. And she had been told that she cannot, you know, really, she'll have to be on drugs for the rest of her life. So this is just one example of recovery. My life is surrounded by what Western medicine would call miracles and what I call as predictable outcomes of living our life in alignment with nature and her biocircadian rhythms. So it was important for me to write this book and to become to share generously.
Sharing is caring. So now, why shouldn't we drink cold water?
Simple as that, we can drink cold water, provided we know that we can digest well. So I've given the do's and don'ts around water, but, you know, humanity, ever since we discovered ice-making machines, have been shocking our digestive system with ice, which is just not normal. And so we have to drink warm water because we are sedentary, and so we are borrowing the thermal heat from the hot water to add to the thermal process that takes for digesting and metabolizing food. So we've had case after case of difficult weight loss, toxic syndromes where there is toxicity, rashes, and even hives and all of that, which in Ayurveda is really like we're not really at a cellular level. We're not digesting our food, and it's disturbing our immunity. And we're having all kinds of vague symptoms. So when I convert these people into drinking warm water, and I've persuaded with common sense, I've even quoted a modern research that does show that hot drinks and hot fluids move through the body more expediently than cold, and colder the temperature of the fluid, lower is the rate of our metabolism. So I proved, you know, I gave that, but then I also gave a lot of common sense around it. But ultimately, these case studies point to the fact that when we drink warm water, especially in a given condition where most of us are sedentary, we're not athletes, we're not, you know, preparing for triathlons, we will benefit from hot water. And even in summer when it's hot and we are craving cool water, I would recommend drinking room temperature water or cooling the water by putting it in a pitcher and exposing it overnight to moonlight, which is a natural refrigeration system in nature, or, you know, adding some fresh non-pesticide-free rose petals or even marigold petals into the water. And that's going to cool the water, and that coolness will actually cool us truly, cool us down to every cell, rather than just shock freezing our gut and, you know, compromising our digestion. And then we walk around with stuff we only partially or inadequately digested, as in cholesterol or weight, etc.
You're right on here. I love that marigold. I make marigold tea. You have another interesting comment here. I'm kind of into all this stuff that you're talking about here. And the yoga, I'm a certified yoga instructor, and I'm a spiritual minister and the whole thing. So a lot of different things that are very traditional to our Ayurveda. So it's all good. Now I have to go to my buddy's restaurant tonight because you got me going. but I don't cook in its manner, I don't feel. I cook in the more traditional, I don't know, American or my own ancestry, the Jewish cooking background. That would be something I'd like to learn how to do, and I know you have those recipes, so that's
well,
a good
I'm
way
just
to
glad
go.
You, I'm glad you brought up that point about the Jewish ancestry, and I'm just going to say that no matter what, it's really important to eat what our ancestors were doing, because Ayurveda, once again, surprised me by this concept of genetic adaptation known as satmya in Sanskrit, which means that our body would be happier if it eats what our ancestors have been eating, because that's what we are made up of. But at the same time, when you read, you know, the chapter on digestion and rules of digestion, you could just employ some of the Ayurvedic principles of cooking and curing the food before cooking it. So you could stick with your recipe, but you could be processing it Ayurvedically. So if you know, I have students making pasta or Thai food or, you know, or various cuisines, but they are using Ayurveda. So that is why I think Ayurveda is spreading worldwide, because it doesn't require us to eat only Indian food. Even I'm an Indian, and I don't eat Indian food all the time. So, you know, we've become used to so many other cuisines, too. But what I and my husband, who's a chef, what we can do is we can cure the food. We can process it in such a way that it can be more Ayurvedically inspired. And plus, we can play with a couple of those spices like turmeric or cumin or coriander, which don't hurt us at all and which won't disturb the other cuisine too much, and we can use different spices and see if they would additionally be helpful. Plus, say we are sauteing pasta, based upon the recommendations and the diet, we can see that, oh, in spring I can use more ginger and garlic, but in fall, which is all, maybe I can use more basil, and or maybe I can go for just cumin. So, you know, different, we can, you know, kind of fine-tune the cuisine. And that's another way. And besides, not everybody has a cafe next to them. You're the lucky one here.
Oh, well, no, I think you're lucky. You have a chef in the family.
I got super lucky. I keep saying this to everyone. And he teaches, you know, I'll share with you that he teaches cooking at my school. And I work so hard. I write the book. I teach. And guess who's the most popular teacher? It's my husband. Because so I tell them he bribes you with his food. That's just the bottom line.
There it is. There's nothing,
you know,
wrong.
I do want to say that I've added 27 recipes to the book that are thousands of years old, and they're delicious, and they are California tested. Everybody loves them. Easy to make.
Where are you in California?
So I am in a tiny town called Emeryville, which is a neighboring town of Berkeley that everybody knows about. So, yeah, that's where I am. It's just the next street is Berkeley City, and we're in Emeryville. So it's Northern California.
Correct. I know where you are, actually. I know that. I know California pretty well, and used to live out there. And I talk to San Francisco every night. My good buddies over there. So now, after you eat all this stuff, you have another interesting sharing, caring comment about when you want to then clean your teeth, you could use a twig. Now, what kind of twig are we talking about?
So we're talking about certain trees that have botanical values that have been known to our human ancestors for being just amazing for teeth. So one of them is a neem twig, and neem is, we now, you know, it's everywhere, neem pesticides and neem fertilizers, which are all natural, and so they don't create any kind of, you know, sickness to our planet. But interestingly, the neem twig could be used to just chew upon it, and it can be found online all over America. And it's also growing in parts of, it's being grown like in Florida, etc. It was originally growing in India and Asia, but it's been transplanted here because neem has, you know, neem became such a huge thing in America after the pharmaceutical companies found out about this Ayurvedic, you know, herb. And actually, Indian government had to fight a couple of patent wars because, you know, there is now a worldwide rush to claim patents on Ayurvedic pharmacology, which is thousands of years old and is right on. But then we have the toothache tree that the Native Americans knew about, and those twigs are also available here, and they grow all over. I mean, when I was driving through Sedona, and I was recently there for a conference, everywhere I see the toothache tree. And then there is the miswak tree that can be found, M-I-S-W-A-K. The miswak chewing stick can be found. And it's so fun because this toothbrush, you literally chew on it. You can eat it. And it's going to, you know, keep your mouth, you know, free from not only bacteria, but also from those chemicals in our toothpaste, which are clearly carcinogenic. And, you know, we should know about that sooner than later. So, so I recommend an amazing state-of-the-art dental practices. I even teach how to make gargles with various garden herbs and things that just we can find taking a walk around our neighborhood, and we would never need the, you know, the horrible stuff. That's, I've taken the effort to point out some of the studies which clearly show that all that stuff doesn't belong in our body, least of all in our mouth. So people are using it, and I've even quoted studies which are now showing that neem or miswak or the toothache tree, all of these things were not known to our human ancestors just because they were kind of in love with the tree. This is beyond idealism. They were onto something, because research is showing that it is even more effective than some of the agents that we are using in our toothpaste and mouthwashes. So I quoted those studies from well-known research saying, okay, right here, if you don't want to believe me and my story that I'm telling you and the anecdotal evidence, then here is some research. And, you know, I have hundreds of people changing their dental routine. It's not a big deal at all. It's everything I've spoken about in my book is something you can find either within the United States or just an easy online search, and it's there. It's right there. I wanted to not create a book that needs exotic ingredients that you can't find.
Fair enough. And the aspirin comes from the willow tree.
Yeah, right there.
So let me ask you two last questions right now. I'd love to continue speaking with you. Let's say this part one for future, and we'll talk again. Are you ever in New York area?
I am, and I'm planning to be there soon. I think my publisher is setting up some events.
Oh, good. So let me know when you come in town. So what's good news for you in any aspect of your life? What would be good news? What's good news for you?
I think my good news for me, honestly speaking, at this point, Dave, is when I continue to walk. Because I want to tell you that when I was young, there was a period when I couldn't walk, and I was in tremendous pain. And much later, I found out that I have an immunological, you know, situation going on, and it's karmic. You know, I was born with it, and it puts people in. It likes to put people in wheelchairs or under multiple surgeries. But I've been using Ayurveda to, you know, stay pain-free and to keep walking. So good news for me is to keep walking. And another good news for me, even at a more profound level, is I remain mindful throughout my day now. So if I don't become unconscious and just start eating what I want and just, you know, kind of just slumping my body posture and just, you know, if I can just live my life in a curated way, using some of these practices to love myself. And this may sound a bit corny, but that's just how it is. I'm loving myself in a daily basis. When I go for a walk, when I take a stretch, when I drink a certain tea, when I plant certain herbs that I know I'll be using, I feel like these are ways to love myself. And then I have a very successful career and a family life, and it just all comes together, but it... So I think what makes me really happy is if I can live up to the promises I make myself.
Last question. That's all beautiful. Thank you for sharing. The last question is, we're very involved with the International Day of Peace, the United Nations, September 21st. 193 countries agreed. And we do events. Actually, I do one in, San Francisco is a leader in these things. Actually, the Earth Day was created there. Many years ago, and the United Nations actually started in San Francisco. So we do some stuff in California, actually San Jose. We do a Peace Day event on September 21st. So I've asked thousands of people, what does peace mean to them? So can you share how you feel about peace?
Yeah, peace to me ultimately comes from nonviolence. And nonviolence is an attitude that we can have even in our health. So we can have a warring tendency towards health, or we can have a nonviolent, peaceful way towards constructing and awakening health, which is through Ayurveda. And I feel that the more nonviolent thoughts that I entertain, the more peace I emanate. And the more peace I emanate, I actually help other people overcome their nonviolence and connect to their more deeper core truth. So to me, peace comes with a responsibility to look for our own nonviolent nature and express that.
You're fantastic. Thank you very much. Namaste. And I look forward to meeting and continuing our conversation.
Let's do that. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.